You are listening to CITR's UBC 100 Doc Series. We are broadcasting from the ancestral unceded territory of the Hukkaminam-speaking Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. In the last year, CITR has been digitizing our collection of reel-to-reel tapes and cassettes. These contain an archive of audio broadcast on UBC's campus and community radio station between 1949 and the late 90s. With help from UBC University Archives and the UBC Library Digitization Center, over 400 audio files are now available for the public to hear and download. In order to share this history, we have made a series of documentaries produced by students and community broadcasters. This project is funded by UBC's Centennial Initiatives Fund, celebrating a century of success at UBC. Tune in every Friday at 9 a.m. for the next 6 weeks, from May 20th to June 24th, for a new documentary. And visit our website, citr.ca, for podcasts and more information.
When it comes to hip-hop, Vancouver is probably not the first city that comes to mind. It's a city known for beautiful nature, fitness junkies, ridiculous real estate, and people who live and die by the words, "not in my backyard." Needless to say, Vancouver doesn't exactly have the makings of a vibrant hip-hop movement. But dig a little deeper, and you'll find that Vancouver has a rich history of hip-hop. In fact, I happened to stumble upon that history at my very own university, the University of British Columbia.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 with DJ Soundwar, Chapter 1, live at Sub Ballroom out of UBC.
Put your hands up. Everybody in the house, put your hands up. Put your hands up. This is a hold up. Everybody in the house, put your hands up.
That clip you just heard was from Vancouver's very first live broadcasted hip-hop event called DJ Sound War, dating back to September 7th and 8th, 1990. The event took place in the ballroom of the old Student Union building of UBC. It is a massive room with hardwood floors, brick-and-mortar walls, and a ton of space for 900 hip-hop heads to vibe with. A portion of DJ Sound War's reel-to-reel tapes managed to survive the test of time. That's because some hard-working folks at CITR Radio and UBC Library digitized these tapes. Mad props to those archivists out there. But what exactly was DJ Sound War?
DJ Sound War was a complete kind of package in the way that it did have not only DJs battling, but also rappers, mm-hmm. also street artists, and dancers, which did come to include breakdancers.
That's Don. He was the organizer of DJ Sound War. I would introduce him, but he's a radio veteran, so I'll let him do the honors.
I'm Don Chow. You're listening to CITR Radio, 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
In 1990, hip-hop was just beginning to emerge from the underground. Don Chow was CITR's music director, and he decided to take a dive into this burgeoning scene.
Well, it was kind of unknown territory, I guess, for UBC. I mean, UBC didn't really have anything to do with it in the sense, you know, it was the most sort of comprehensive competition. It was unlike anything really on the West Coast. It was unlike anything, probably anything in Canada. I mean, the whole DJ Sound War thing started basically as an idea from me, and which was inspired by my early trips to New York City when I was music director of the radio station. My first friends in New York became the original musicians on the first rap records, the Sugar Hill Records. All the, like, the Message, I met everybody on that record, and all the musicians who didn't really get credit.
The records Don is talking about are legendary in hip-hop canon. The Sugar Hill Gang's Rapper's Delight is widely considered to be the first major mainstream hip-hop track. The lyrics are nothing to write home about, settling for a simple A-B-A-B rhyme scheme. But the musical impact it had in 1979 is undeniable. Here's a little taste.
the hip hop, the hip to the hip hip hop. You don't stop the rocket to the bang bang boogie. Say up jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to beat. Now what you hear is not a test. I'm rapping to the beat, and me, the groove, and my friends are gonna try to move your feet. You see, I am Wonder Mike, and I like to say hello to the black, to the white, the red, and the brown, and the purple, and yellow. But first, I gotta bang bang the boogie to the boogie. Say up.
While Rapper's Delight is the kind of track that even your grandma and grandpa can get down with, hip-hop really stepped its game up when Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five dropped the hip-hop anthem of the century, The Message. This is the first hip-hop track to really showcase an MC's lyrical skill.
Broken glass everywhere, people pissing on the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise, got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back, junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far, cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Standing on the front stoop, hanging out the window, watching all the cars go by, roaring as the breezes blow. A crazy lady living in a bag, eating out of garbage bales, used to be a fag hag.
Even with the success of tracks like Rapper's Delight and The Message, hip-hop was still a low-key scene in Vancouver.
Because it wasn't accessible, you know, what I would say about hip-hop in those days was that it was something that was a bit special because the prevailing attitude at the time towards rap music was that most people hated it. You know, there was a hatred of it, especially, you know, people that were, you know, into rock music. Basically, they all hated it. So if you were into hip-hop, it meant you were kind of like kind of a special person. You know,
that was me popping in there. I was just asking Don if he meant that liking hip-hop made you an outcast. But Don didn't think so.
No, it's just that you had to find out about this music, which wasn't easy. And to be into it and to know about it, you know, you were part of an inner circle, you know, or something. But, you know, so I had the sense that there were these kids out there. And CITR, frankly, you know, was not really. I mean, when I was music director, we were getting some rap records in, like the early Public Enemy albums. I remember making quite an impression on us.
Don is a pretty laid-back guy, so when he says Public Enemy made quite an impression, I think it's fair to say it was more like a freight train to the ears. I mean, just take a listen to this classic tune. It is arguably the best political hip-hop track of all time. Not everyone took a liking to hip-hop at CITR.
How did people at the station react to the emergence of rap and hip-hop?
Well, I think it was mixed. I think generally people were supportive and interested in it to a degree, but CITR at the time was really predominantly an indie rock, kind of alternative rock station. And I think, you know, for me personally, actually, rock and roll music is not my it's not my, I was going to say forte, I guess, in a sense, because you know, when I was music director, I would there would be somebody else actually sort of taking care of the rock stuff, and I guess what I kind of really did at the radio station was to bring on other kinds of music as much as possible. I always had a kind of mission for myself to kind of diversify the amount of music that was heard on the radio.
But Don wasn't alone in the quest to diversify CITR's music.
As a high school student in Nanaimo, I was very eager to find rap music on the radio. And you couldn't find it.
That's Neil Scobie.
I am a PhD student at the University of Western Ontario in media studies.
Neil made it his mission to fill the airwaves with the sounds of an exclusively hip-hop playlist.
The only hip-hop I could find, other than like the mainstream stuff that was occasionally on, say, LC73 or 14C1 or whatever, those were like the top 20 stations at the time. The only show I knew of was called In Collision, and it was on CFRO downtown on Co-op Radio. And but it wasn't even a hip-hop show. They just played some hip-hop. They also played house and some other stuff, some reggae, I think, maybe. And so I would call that station a lot every Wednesday and ask them to play rap music. And then one day I visited the station. I asked them, do you think there's room for a rap show here? Because there wasn't one in all of Vancouver. And they said, no, but why don't you try CITR? At UBC. And at the time, I never heard of UBC, the CITR, because we couldn't pick it up on the island.
Fair
enough. Not where I was, anyway, in Nanaimo. So I didn't know. And I thought, oh, okay, CITR. Okay.
After hearing about CITR, Neil decided to approach the station manager to inquire about hosting his own show.
I would very much like to start an all rap radio show, an exclusively rap radio show, one that's not exist in Vancouver. I think it's a great idea. And said, okay, well, you got to make a demo tape, and then we'll go from there. I said, oh, fantastic. You know, and I'm 17, right? So I'm super eager, super, super eager. And so one afternoon, I spent probably 6 hours in one of those studios perfectly crafting a demo tape. And the next thing you know, I had a show. It started in June. I don't remember the exact date, but it was mid-June, 89. It started on a Thursday afternoon from 1:15 to 3. I was right after a metal show and right before a punk show.
That's great, Neil. But what was the name of your show?
Oh, the show was called In Effect. Two words, In Effect.
In Effect.
Yeah, very 80s. In Effect, yeah, very 80s, very of the time, 1989, In Effect. So anyway, yeah, so I did this show on Thursdays just for a couple months. And when an opening on Saturday afternoon popped up from 3 to 5, I jumped on it because I was going to grade 12 in high school in Nanaimo. So I needed a weekend slot, right?
Mm-hmm. Neil lived in Nanaimo. He took a freaking ferry to come and host his show every Saturday. If that's not dedication to hip-hop, I don't know what is. He sure as hell didn't do it for the glory.
You know, I mean, I would come and do my show for 2 hours every Saturday and then leave. Like, I didn't... It's not like I was, like, well-known or anything. I mean, I'm sure there was, you know, a good small... steady following, because where else were you going to hear this stuff, right? Because I was playing all underground stuff, and NWA, Public Enemy, EPMD, stuff that just wasn't on the radio. It was a completely different atmosphere, because to find new music now, you just go online and it's staring you in the face. But back then, you had to really go out and search, and radio. College radio and community radio, CITR, CFRO, played really important parts in exposing listeners to new music, especially music that wasn't in the mainstream.
Neil eventually took his love of hosting a hip-hop show and started creating hip-hop instead. He was one of the participants in the very first DJ Sound War.
I was involved as a participant. I wasn't involved in the in organizing it.
Oh, fair enough, man.
No.
So you participated in which part of it? Like, because there's like so many competitions involved in it, right?
Right. I entered as a DJ, and I also entered. I was in a rap group at the time, and our group entered the group competition as well. And the DJ Sound War was such a big deal because all of a sudden Vancouver had a scene that kind of coalesced. Like, there weren't very many there weren't very many places where MCs and DJs could perform. There was like a club called The Warehouse downtown, but you know, you had to be 19. What Soundwar did was all of a sudden you met all these other rappers and DJs from Vancouver and Burnaby and North Van, West End, you know, I was from Menango, there were groups from Victoria. But then that was just BC. You had DJs coming out from Seattle, Portland. I think even there was a couple competitors from California that first year. It was a really big deal, a really big deal. And, you know, we were we felt like we were really kind of like representing for the city.
And no one better represented the city than EQ. Just ask Don and Neil.
EQ. Well, EQ were my boys, too. Rest in peace,
Edwin,
the Incredible Ease. EQ's first record came out on a Vancouver label, and the label was run out of Rad Studios in Gastown.
Everybody looked up to EQ. They were Ease and Quays. And
I know Incredible Ease is unfortunately right. Not with us anymore.
Yeah, he passed, I think, a couple years ago now, which is really sad because he would be a wealth of information for early Vancouver hip hop, because he was also like, he was also one of the guys that would have been like in the clubs. I was too young to get into the clubs, but like in 1988, 89, I think he was probably, you know, performing in like the Warehouse. I think he was originally from New Jersey, and Quays, I think, may have been originally from the state, also from the States, but you know, they were based in Vancouver and they were a Vancouver group. And you know, and we, everybody looked up to them, everybody. They opened for Public Enemy at the Orpheum and killed it. Like, they had their drum, the SP-1200, their drum machines up on stage, and they were like the real deal. I mean, a lot of us at that time were kind of awkward, you know, even though we were really eager, and some of us had some talent. I mean, Derek E, I mean, won that competition. But EQ were next level group, and they were, you can't overstate their importance in early Vancouver hip hop because they influenced everyone. I mean, you know, if you were to talk to the Rascals, the Soul members, the Checkmate, a lot of the artists that, you know, made a name for themselves in the 90s and later, they would, I'm sure they would mention EQ as early, as an early influence. My group, Finesse and Showbiz, we opened for EQ at 86 Music Hall. I don't even know what that building is now. I don't even know if it's there anymore. And that was a huge deal for us. This was in 91. And we were like, I can't believe we're opening for EQ. Like, it was a big deal. Yeah.
Lucky for all of you out there, CITR managed to preserve the tapes of EQ's performance. What you are about to hear is hip-hop gold. Savor every second of it.
Okay. I'm going to be bringing on some professional entertainment right now, and if they're ready, I'll be calling them to the stage. They have their first record out, Put Your Body in It, and I would like to bring them to the stage right now. If they're ready, guys, I'd like to call you up right now. Is the EQ Posse around?
Yeah.
This guy's excited.
That's awesome.
All right, there you go. Okay, we're going to kick it out like this, y'all.
Put some hands together.
And wave them like I just don't care. Come on, y'all. Hit it.
What's the joke? My style is simplicity while others stay outdated. You're thinking I'm conceited just because I'm making it to the top of
what?
In this world of hip-hop, watch another head
for what?
I let the boom drop hard. You're thinking I could be took like a junkie. I've got you hooked to my rhythm. Like your homeboy on the bass pipe. Watch me ignite you like a light because I'm hype. On the microphone, I'm holding my phone. It's just a worker bee while I stay the king's throne. You might as well retire because I'm the bitch of a hype. Throwing me sun, don't call me sign for the rebel. Because of the bass level, it'll smack you up. And send you to the devil or cargo. Just like Will Fargo, girls see my money.
They what?
They watch my beard go over them. Just like a back truck. This girl is like that, just walk my greens. And plus, where do they get off? Body number riding, but reciting your best rhyme. And oh yes, it's quite amazing. But in my eyes,
say what?
Just amazing. Overplaying, into the pit. You're thinking legit, but that's the truth. Your competition with the shit.
on myself. No, I'm not bragging, but like a diaper with piss, you are sagging. Lowly, slowly, and lonely. Son, I treat your ass like extra 40 and throw you out the window.
Say what?
Say what? Just like another out of luck, but duck, there they go. They try to play me like a brother's a joke, but I just tame. No,
say what?
Why?
Go, 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 go.
Now, DJ Sound War wasn't all good vibes and good times. It is called war for a reason. And that's where Rennie Foster comes in.
Also known as Dubnut One and Juice Dub.
Rennie had a reputation for his intensity, you could say. In fact, Don likens Rennie to Detroit's most famous rapper.
You know, this DJ Sound War artist, kid named Juice Dub, who went, you know, he made it all the way to the finals. You know, the character of Eminem in 7 Mile, where,
you know, do you mean 8 Mile?
8 Mile. I've actually been to Detroit. Okay, so I think of because the boundary between the city and the suburbs is actually 7 Mile.
Yeah, to give Don a little shit about 7 Mile there. The movie he's referring to, 8 Mile. Is a semi-biographical film based on the rapper Eminem's life. In the film, Eminem's character goes through a series of intense rap battles where things get heated. Even if you haven't watched the movie, you probably recognize this part.
Look, if you had one shot, one opportunity, seize everything you ever wanted. One moment that you capture, just let it slip. Yo, his palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are heavy. There's vomit on his sweater already. Mom's spaghetti, he's nervous, but on the surface, he looks calm and ready to drop bombs. But he keeps on forgetting what he wrote down. The whole crowd goes so loud, he opens his mouth, but the words won't come out. He's choking, how? Everybody's choking now. The clock's run out.
But we're getting a little sidetracked here. Let's get back to the story.
So there's this character of Eminem, you know, in these rap competitions. And Juice Dub is kind of like this character. You know, he's like this mouthy little white kid. And he's, you know, he's clever on the mic. And
even Neil, a chill dude by just about anyone's standards, remembers him and his crew having beef with Rennie after an altercation outside of a McDonald's.
Oh, yeah, I can tell you stories about Juice Dub. Our manager at the time, his name is Kevin Coker. He now manages Chromeo.
Mm-hmm.
He had words with Rennie outside of McDonald's or something downtown Victoria. Well, now we have quote-unquote beef with each other, right? which is ridiculous. But at the time, we took it pretty seriously. And at the very next Sound War, I remember they were performing and...
they as in...
Rennie and his group, Sound Advice.
Yeah.
And he had a whole verse dedicated to us. And we were in the front row, and he was looking right at us and rapping this verse about how Finesse and Showbiz were whack, and this, that, and third.
I met Rennie in a Turkish restaurant in Vancouver. I wanted to discuss these stories about him.
We just got our Turkish coffee. I must admit, I want to try this out a little bit.
Oh, this is good stuff.
Do you have to do anything, or is it it's ready to go, you know?
Ready to go. Oh, this is roast chickpeas.
Roast chickpeas, sweet.
And let's just say, Rennie didn't think much of his competition.
Oh, I thought everything was whack. Everything. I thought everything was whack then, at that time. Because if it wasn't on TV or if it wasn't, like, far away, things on TV or things far away, I was like, that's dope. I want to do that. But anything that was on the similar level to me, like another local rap group, was the enemy for me. Like, I was only out to get them, you know? So this is, like, my mentality when I was 19. Yeah, or 18. Yeah, I know. It's horrible, man, but...
But the thing is, Rennie was an underdog in his own right. DJ Sound War was his first ever rap battle.
You can't be like 2 feet tall, pale, white, skinny Canadian dude and go against guys like MC Class or whatever was back then, like dudes from Seattle. I mean, I only knew a handful of black people, like in real life, you know, at that time. And all my heroes were black people. And I was, it's just intimidating, you know, like being with some, being like going up against a dude like that in a rap battle, in real life, takes a special kind of nerve, you know? Hmm. Yeah.
In spite of his physical appearance, Rennie felt at home in the rap battle scene.
I was like, oh yeah, this is for me, you know? Mm-hmm. Back then, I loved battling people. I was notorious for being just really mean and saying anything. And just, you know, I was really small, too. Really, really tiny. I mean, I'm still small, but back then I was really tiny, you know? Like, I didn't even really go through puberty until my 20s, basically. I didn't, you know, I was tiny and skinny, and, like, I rolled with a lot of big dudes, and I liked to shoot my mouth off, and it was exactly my place.
He even came close to taking the crown, and he managed to get to the final rounds of the competition.
I could have won it if I hadn't messed up the last verse. The last round, I just tried to do a song, man. I don't know what I was thinking. I just tried to do a song that we were working on. You know, like Sound Advice was working on some tunes, and, you know, I just rapped a verse from one of our songs. And it wasn't the thing to do. I should have freestyled like some deadly stuff about the other rappers, you know? Mm-hmm. But I didn't do that. I don't know why. It was so it's so unlike me. I still recall it thinking like, why did I do that?
Now, I did just finish telling you that Rennie was a big time underdog in DJ Sound War. So I hate to break it to you, but I lied. There is someone who was an even bigger underdog. A rapper by the name of Terror T. I'll let Don and Neil explain.
In the MC competition, a Vancouver MC named Terror T won it. And that was huge. Female rapper, no less. And so to beat the Seattle and Portland competition was a really big deal because they kicked our asses in every other competition. Not that, you know, and it was fine because, you know, in 1990, we were all like hip-hop babies.
Frankly, you know, when those brothers came up from the U.S., man, they schooled everybody. You know, they tore it up, you know. So, yeah, I mean, she came on and was one of these people who was really, she was really into it. She knew, she was schooled on it. She had, you know, she had her thing going on, you know, and she won. What can you say about it?
Well, I mean, everybody, you know, in the final round, I remember, you know, back in 90, September of 1990,
yeah.
And really fast hip-hop was pretty popular back then, right? Like Public Enemy's beats were really fast, and NWA's beats were pretty fast back then. And in the final round, I remember she did some really fast rap, and the crowd just lost it. And that's how she won, basically. And she had these big gold kind of Roxanne Shanté door knocker earrings, which was super cool. So she totally looked the part and played the part. She was, yes, it was, I mean, she well deserved to win. You know, she was really good. She was really good. Her brother was out in Slump, who was her DJ, the Beat Assassinator.
After reaching out to a few people, I managed to track down the legendary Terror T, who is now an attorney at law in Lansing, Michigan.
My name's Tara. I went by the name of Tara T back in the day, did the Sound War, the first Sound War, 1990, and really enjoyed it. I was the only female artist that was competing.
Tara, could you give us a sense of what you saw when you entered the ballroom?
I mean, there's just people everywhere. You know, some of my friends came out, and, you know, we, as you know, a certain point they call us, I guess, to go up behind the stage and then, you know, wait for our turn to go on.
And this is for the MC competition, correct?
Yeah, the MC part, yeah. I think I did both parts, but I, but the MC part, yeah, that was the one.
Yeah,
that
you.
Really...
I also what we got on the tape is unfortunately we don't have the MC competition part, but we do have the.
Oh, I know, and the MC is the good one.
I know, right?
And the other one is not so good. So it's like, what?
I got the group. Yeah, the crew part, but.
Yeah, like I couldn't believe it when I started looking after you had contacted me, and I didn't even realize they had any of that, and I heard what they had recorded. I thought, oh my God, this is a nightmare.
No, right? It's so cool. But anyways, go.
It's funny because you couldn't hear properly through the speakers, so I was yelling because I couldn't hear the beat.
CITR does not have the MC part of the competition in its digitized collection, but we do have Terra T performing with her brother, the Beat Assassinator, in the group portion of the DJ Sound War competition.
Serious tip, and if you whack, then you're gonna trip.
All right, from Richmond, Terra T and the Beat Assassinator.
Being an 18-year-old white girl from Richmond, B.C., Terra T had to fight an uphill battle, to say the least, throughout the MC competition. She had to work harder than every other competitor just to prove she's legit.
Pretty much for my experience was just everybody looking at me like, what are you doing here? Because there were, you know, a number of things stood out. And so it was just like, you know, what is she doing back here? She must be like a groupie or hanging out so people go on. Or, you know, like, I remember before, I don't know if it was the first time or the second time, but, you know, some people had come down from Washington.
Yeah.
And before, like, when they're just doing sound checks and things like that, and then they saw me and they're like, you know, go, white girl, go, like, thinking they were mocking me. But then, you know, it didn't turn out that way for them once I actually started to rhyme, you know?
Well, she managed to get past the first round, already exceeding the expectations of those around her.
I was just pumped, but I knew I had more rounds to go. So, you know, I wasn't done then. And I know during one of the rounds, I was rhyming and I was doing good. And then all of a sudden, I lost track of what I was doing.
Freezing up or choking in a rap battle is the absolute worst thing you can do. You lose any of the respect and dignity you've earned up to that point, right in that one moment. Tara found herself on the verge of choking. She had to figure out something to do, and she had to figure it out quick.
And so then I just had to make up, you know, some extra stuff and then just try to do crowd participation because I, like, you know, I went off who knows where in my brain, and next thing is, you know, I was like, oh, geez, I still have, like, 30 seconds. I better come off with some quick. Like, I think the idea is, that if you could freestyle, that's a thing, but, like, I wasn't even there yet. I hadn't even memorized my rhymes that I'd written. Like, so... I just, you know, it was kind of like, I'll just do it. And then, so then it's like some of it was from somewhere, but then, you know, other stuff had to freestyle because I didn't have anything, like, memorized enough. I had some stuff, but not everything.
Mm-hmm. Part of Terra T's success in the MC competition can be attributed to her focus. She didn't have time to think of the haters. All she could do was focus on herself and her performance.
Yeah, I think I was so concerned about myself that I didn't really, you know, like, have time to worry about what other people were doing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Like, you didn't have any rivals or anything. You were just like, I'm going to do the best I can right here.
Yeah, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I didn't have any that I knew of. Now, you know, some people kind of looked at me funny back there, but again, you know, what am I going to do? I really didn't have time for any of that. And honestly, I didn't see a lot of it. I had other people who would say, oh, yeah, they were looking at you. but I was performing, so I didn't see it, you know?
Yeah, you were just focused.
Yeah.
Tara was also her own worst critic. She didn't think she had a chance of winning, even when she was in the final round. And then, you know, what? Do you remember the moment you realized, like, oh, snap, I might actually win this thing?
You know what? I didn't, because I lost it on the last round. So then I thought I blew it. But I didn't know what I did. And it seemed to go over, I guess. But, you know, because I had to do the crowd participation and kind of stop rhyming a bit, more just getting the crowd involved, I guess that worked, but I thought, oh, geez, if, you know, I've blown it.
Do you kind of remember how you managed to get the crowd involved? Like, what did you do?
Well, no, yeah, like, so I was rhyming, and then I'm like, in my head, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so then I just started saying, you know, puppy fist, puppy, like, you know, and getting the crowd going that way, you know, getting them pumping their fists and stuff, and that's how I kind of finished out, which I guess probably was a good thing, but at the time, all I was thinking was, I have nothing else to say, here I go, and we'll see if this works.
And apparently it did, because yeah, you won the whole thing. The MC competition, the very first DJ Sound War.
Yeah.
How did you feel?
Yeah. Oh, it was great. I was so thrilled. It was the best.
But Tara is quick to remind us that the road to first place in the MC competition of DJ Sound War was earned through skill, not novelty.
Yeah. It was great. But like I say, I mean, people, like, they didn't like, try to make it easy or something. So it's not like went in there and they said, oh, well, this is a novelty, so let's give it to her. No. Like, I had to fight for it, you know, just from being behind the stage and being told, like, you know, hey, you know, clear out because only the performers back here, and, you know, people saying, oh, this person's looking at you funny, and, you know, like, I'm just sitting here like, okay, you know, okay. But I just wanted to do it. Like, mm-hmm. none of that really, I guess, factored in the end, but there are things I definitely remember happening, like, throughout the competition.
What did matter was Tara T's quick wit, tight rhymes, and sick flow. Speaking of which, can Tara T still kick a dope verse? I would love to hear just a few lines a cappella. Throw down some lines a cappella. I think that would be really, really cool.
Okay.
I'll give you some time.
Yeah, let me think. I heard that one. Sometimes Rasheen be sitting, staring into space, feeling like a lunatic, expressionless is my face, stressed out, wondering why my adrenaline is thundering, pumping through my veins, got me going insane. Clothes feel non-existent on my body, you gotta recognize. Now look into these hazel eyes, what do you see? I'm escaping from reality, hard times they equal much profanity. Out my mouth as I fall up my fist, asking yo, what did I do to deserve all this? You try to step up and get caught up in a state of paranoia. My personality might annoy ya, destroy ya, but I don't give a what you say. Let's get out my way for the TG pistol, that pulls out the HJ, 40 caliber compact. Roll the clip, cut up my back, sit the York, clack, clack.
Yep. She still got it. Well, that's all, folks. Remember that this documentary just gives you a slight taste of the DJ Sound War tapes. If you'd like to hear more of the raw dopeness coming out of Vancouver back in 1990, head on over to CITR's digitized audio tapes at UBC Libraries Open Collections online. Till next time, peace out, y'all.
Can I kick it? 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 Well, I'm gone. Can I kick it? To all the people who can quest like a tribe does. Before this, did you really know what I was? Comprehend to the track force. Why? Because getting mentions on the tip of the vibe was.
Check it out.
Oh, I got you good there, didn't I? You thought I was leaving. Well, I thought I'd give you one last little treat. Here's a little promo that Tara T did back in the day for CITR. Now, the audio quality is a little iffy, but come on, cut it some slack. It's over 20 years old. Anyways, I'm Rohit Joseph. Peace out, y'all. For real this time.
I'm not here to brag. Train to be a DJ, yo, what can I say? Forget the commercial tunes, cause those we ain't gonna play. Variety's the key, and there's your gots to know, gee. For all this and more, you only got to pay a small fee. Or maybe you just like to max and relax. Go ball some food out in the lounge or listen to some tracks. Whatever the case, you know, CITR is the place. They got it going on in your face. Till the break of dawn, all types of songs are sticking. Feel the bass of the beats be kicking. And you know it feels so fun. 101.9. That's right, buddy. CITR 101.9 FM is the most craziest, hype, alternative, fresh station of all time. And we know the time and believe that. Word.
have been listening to CITR's UBC 100 Doc Series. We would like to thank the UBC Centennial Initiatives Fund, Peter Doolin, Emily Morgan, Shyla Seller, and Katie Harris for researching, digitizing, and cataloging our archived tape. Nardwar the Human Serviette for curating the collection. Thanks to Robert and Bronwyn at the UBC Library Digitization Center for partnering with us to digitize, launch, and host the audio collection. Irwin at the UBC University Archives. And to Madeline Taylor for organizing this project and supporting our documentary producers. For interviews with the producers, podcasts, and more information, visit our website, citr.ca.